Anytime you come to Roberta's, you eat on us.
I'm afraid that may be a safe bet, huh?
I think I'll call Andrea.
There you go.
So also, when I introduce you guys at the very beginning, I'm going to be like, we got Kathy Webb. Hey, Kathy. And then you'll say your voice so that the listener knows what voice belongs to you.
Okay.
Okay. Hello, welcome to a very special Heritage Radio Network Farm Report. Today we're talking about goats. We have Marge Kilkelly of Dragonfly Farms in Dresden, Maine in studio. Hi, Marge.
Thank you, Lorenzo. Hi.
And on the phone from Maine, we've got Kathy Webb of Webb Family Farms in Pittston. Hey, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. And of course, Wendy Pay of Springtide Farm in Bremen on the phone as well. Say hi to our listeners, Wendy.
Hello, listeners.
So today's Farm Report, folks, is a special edition on consortium farming. We're going to talk about three farms that are pooling their resources to use every aspect of the dairy and meat programs that they have to their advantage. Kathy on Webb Family Farm raises goats. Wendy at Springtide Farm raises cashmere goats for fiber. And Marge is raising goats for meat. So they've come together to form a consortium so that no aspect of the goats is wasted. So why don't you explain to us, Marge, how a farm consortium works?
Well, what we did in Time for Goat was to bring together some farmers that were interested in finding ways to market their goat locally. And so we actually started with six farms. We're now down to three: Dragonfly Cove Farm, which is our farm, New Aim Farm in Waldeboro, and Springtide Farm in Bremen. And what we do is we try our best to find great markets for our wonderful goat meat that's raised on local family farms. And that's where Kathy Webb at Webb Family Farm comes in, because Kathy's farm it's a very diverse farm, and she'll can talk about that in a few minutes, okay. But they raise dairy goats. And we buy goats, Time for Goat purchases goats from Kathy's farm as well as several others to supply our customers.
Okay. So Time for Goats is an independent entity, sort of.
It is.
Okay.
It is. And what we're, part of the reason that we got started doing it is that Wendy and Peter on their farm, and Al and Nancy on their farm, and my husband Joe and I all are raising meat animals, but didn't want to sell them to auction, want to make sure that our animals are handled well all the way through their life. They have very nice lives while they're with us, and we make sure that at the end when they're processed, that that's also as stress-free as possible. And the only way to really guarantee that is for us to have responsibility for that. Wendy, you might want to talk about that a little bit, because that's certainly been something you've been working on in the legislature as well.
Yeah, we have in Maine brought a woman named Temple Grandin in, who's worked with humane slaughtering around the country with a lot of the bigger slaughterhouses, and she's working with the state of Maine to set up an audit program so that when an animal goes in to be slaughtered at one of our Maine slaughterhouses, that it is humane as possibly can be.
Like a third-party audit?
It's exactly like a third-party audit that she's now designing for the small outfits, as well as she already does it for the big guys.
Okay, so Kathy, what does this third-party auditing involve?
Well, probably that's a better question for Wendy. Okay. In terms of the work that she's been doing in the legislature on that. Then we can talk to Kathy about why it's important to her to have a market for her goats.
Okay.
So this is Wendy again. The third-party audit is something that they will audit. They'll come into the slaughterhouse, the auditor, and they'll look at the system, how comfortable the animal is moving through it. They'll audit things like how long the animal waits once they're in the area to be killed, if they show any stress, like if they squeal or call out or anything, and how quick and efficient the kill is. All of that sort of thing gets audited from the perspective of the humane treatment. A lot of the attention in slaughterhouses has been, and of course has to be, on food safety and making sure everything stays clean, and that's where the USDA focuses a lot of their energy on their inspection. And in Maine, we also have a Maine Meat Inspection Program. So as we're evolving that, people that volunteer to participate will be able to call their meat handled with care. They're excited about it.
And how is this third-party yachting subsidized? Who pays for these things?
Well, in the end, it'll probably be paid for a slaughterhouse. Like the place that Time for Goat uses in Maine is actually, they paid to have the natural foods people come in and audit it themselves for their criteria for having a humane slaughter. So the slaughterhouse there paid for it. I would guess that it's kind of initially not subsidized because it hasn't cost very much yet, but there probably will be some cost borne by the industry.
And I think it really does turn into a marketing tool for those slaughterhouses. I mean, certainly one of the things when we worked on the Maine Meat Inspection Program, part of the idea was to be able to say, because we love Maine so much, that the animals are raised in Maine, they're processed in Maine, they're, all the value added happens there, and they're sold in Maine. So you've got the idea that you've got a reduced carbon footprint because that meat isn't being traveled all over the country, in general, and also that we've got a really good product and it's close to home and that's the best for the animals. And Kathy, I know you and I were talking earlier this morning about what a difference it meant for your farm to have a way to market your animals. Do you want to talk about that just a little bit?
Sure. When I first started having goats, maybe 15 years ago, we started with two, and as we kept breeding them, I only wanted them for milk. I wasn't really interested in raising meat, but as the years have gone by, I've been upwards to 70 goats. And part of the reason was because there was no place that I felt they were handled well or treated well, and I couldn't send my animals, into a condition or, where they weren't going to be treated well, because we raise them well, they're certified organic, our farm is organic, and it just got to be too many, for us to handle on a daily basis. So when I found Marge and the way they treated their animals, it made a huge difference for me because I knew that I was raising them well, and then they were going to be picked up at my farm and transported directly to the processing place and not held somewhere, in unclean or unhealthy conditions. So it made a huge difference for me. And now we're down to a manageable herd, and I feel very comfortable and very happy with what's been available.
So now I understand that also that the way in which an animal is slaughtered and the stress level of the animal just before slaughter affects the quality and the taste of the meat after slaughter. Can you speak to this point a little bit, Kathy?
I feel like that's definitely true.
Is this because of adrenal releases? I mean, what's the biological process going on here?
Yeah, I do feel like it's that. If they're calm and not afraid, like fear plays a huge part in the quality of the meat, I think, and just the whole handling process. If they stay calm, which I've seen every time animals have been picked up here, I just feel like it's a better way to serve the animal and people.
And Wendy, I know when we had Temple Grandin in Maine, she talked a lot about the cortisol and just the different hormonal releases that did stress animals, and that there actually was an economic value and benefit to going through the extra work of having a humane slaughter facility. Do you want to expand on that just a little bit?
Yeah, she found that they were, the animals that went through stress-free had much less of the cortisol present, and she even told a story of where they used some kind of a shock thing to relax the tense animal, which, worked kind of backwards, but even after it was killed. But the other thing they find is by handling them in a stress-free manner, it's much safer for the handler. We think about our goat.
Right.
That we can handle, but if you think about a steer or a 5 or 6 or 7
sure.
or 800-pound pig, if that animal is moving through the system comfortable, the handler's not going to get hurt either, and they don't use the electric prods. They use a little stick with a little wavy thing on the end of it, and the animals move through with considerable comfort. So not only does the product taste better, not only can they use all of it, but through that stress-free management, everybody is much more comfortable.
Well, I think I'm glad you mentioned taste, because that sort of moves us into the most important part of this whole thing. I mean, the three of us on our farms are very happy with the wonderful product that we raise and the great goat we raise. And so the other reason not to just automatically take them to auction is we really like to share that. We like to share this really good product with other people. And there are such advantages to goat meat. Goat meat is very low in fat. It's a very healthy meat, and it's very delicious. And while the United States is really just sort of catching up to understanding how delicious goat is, 62% of the world, their primary food meat is goat.
Yeah, and, I was going to ask you that. That's surprising to me. I mean, why do you think it's taken the United States, why do you think the United States is only now catching up with this conventional wisdom? I mean, do you think it's has to do with history and trade routes and what animals got to what country? I mean, do you think that Americans are sort of a little, you know, do they think of the goat as an exotic, non-edible meat? I mean, what is it?
Well, I think there's a couple of things, and actually it's funny because actually talk to friends about this a lot. I mean, when you look at the New England farms in particular, I mean, most of them, the old farms were fenced with wonderful stone walls. And for a goat, a stone wall is a toy. For a cow, a stone wall is a barrier. So it's a whole lot easier to keep a cow in a stone wall when you clean those fields and you created those pastures than it is to keep goats that way. And I think the other part is that we had so much land. When you think about the way that the migration happened into this country, and there's so much room that you could run large herds of cattle. And so, you know, you're going to be able to take them to market and to sell them and whatever. So I think we're just catching up. And
sure. I mean, it's interesting because another meat that is super underproduced in the United States is lamb.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, underproduced and under consumed.
Yeah.
And I think that the lamb and the goat are not, you know, I think they're placed into a family by people, even though they couldn't be more different.
I think probably the three of us would say that the goat meat is just so much better, though.
Uh-huh. It's much lower in fat, right?
It's much lower in fat. Yeah, Kathy?
Yeah, Kathy.
Was that Kathy or Wendy?
That was Wendy. Oh. Goat meat has 3 grams of fat in 4 ounces, which is about the same as in skinless chicken breast. And it has less than half as much in the leanest cuts of beef or pork, and it has even fewer calories than chicken at about 160 per 4 ounces. So it's good. I think, you know, politics has been alive in the United States forever, and, you know, having your big beef ranches out west was much more interesting. The other thing is that when the sheep farmers came out and challenged those open ranges and put up fencing and barbed wire to contain their sheep, to protect them as much as anything, that caused huge range wars. And so, you know, we have a culture that's been based on, as Marge is saying, a lot of room and a lot of space, and it's kind of too bad because goat tastes great.
I think one of the other things, too, that's important about the resurgence or the emergence, I guess, even better, of goat, particularly in New England, is that there are so many small farms and there are people that are interested in doing small-scale agriculture, and goats really lend themselves to that. You can build a very manageable size barn, you can have a manageable size acreage, and even if you have to purchase hay like we do on our small farm, it's still a reasonable, affordable thing. I can't imagine if we were trying to raise beef critters, we'd probably have 2 or 3 as opposed to the 70 goats we have.
Sure. And are they easy and affordable to raise naturally?
They are.
Like lambs?
They are.
You know, I was talking to, we had a lamb expert on the show here a couple weeks back, and he said that if you're in the meat aisle of your restaurant and you're looking for a naturally raised product and you don't know necessarily which one is which, that more often than not, the lamb is your best bet because of the affordability of raising it and grazing it naturally, and because of the limited space that it necessitates. Would you say that similar is true of the goat?
Maybe Kathy wants to respond to that.
Yeah.
I do. I think we're lucky here. I have 100 acres, and my goats can travel anywhere they want, and all summer I don't have to really feed them any hay. You know, some farms have to, but for me, they eat what they want, on a daily basis. They're very healthy. They grow really fast, and they have not much impact on the land. So that's what works for me.
Yeah.
And Wendy, why don't you talk about your fields of clover that your goats created?
That goats, unlike cattle or even sheep, are browsers. They're more like deer. So if you go in our forest that our goats are in, it's about our shoulder height is where growth starts, because they've trimmed all the trees and killed all the shrubs. And so they live on things that nobody else likes. If you walk in our field, you'd say, oh my goodness, these people should be growing rocks. You know, we have a lot of ledge and a lot of shrub and things that a lot of other animals wouldn't get along with. And so we have the goats out and they let the clover come up. You go out now, you're knee deep in clover and grass, and then I'll switch it and I'll put the horses in there and the goats in another spot, and the horses will start eating the grass. So they're really wonderful. I mean, goat is the oldest domesticated animal,
sure,
even before dogs, because they provided milk,
they provided
meat, they provided pack animals, and they reproduced.
Huh.
And so they were just a natural for the early cultures, and that lasts in many parts of the world.
I think the other piece, too, that certainly is important to the three of us is that goats are just wonderful critters. They have great personalities. Every one of them has a different personality. And oftentimes I get asked, well, you know, if they're such wonderful animals and you like them so much, how can you possibly, you know, raise them to be processed? And that, again, goes back to our whole purpose, which is to make sure that these animals that we care about so much are, in fact, through their entire lives, raised in a way that's comfortable and handled in a way that's comfortable and processed in a way that's comfortable. And it's just really, that's a really important part to us. And the products that we create from these animals come from, as you started saying, Lorenzo, from all the different aspects of the goat. So, for example, when we go to Kathy's and pick up a load of just, you know, these wonderful 90-pound kids that have been running through the woods all summer long, those are the ones that go into great kebab and loin-in roasts and boneless shoulder roasts and leg roasts, and they are exquisite. And the same thing with Wendy. Wendy's kids will go to market, say, in what, December usually, so you get the best fleece from them. And again, it's the same thing, just these wonderful fat kids. Then from the dairy farm, we also get the dairy does that can't be bred anymore, don't give enough milk, they're ready to retire. And again, rather than sending those animals that have provided for a family or for a cheese company for a long time, then those are the animals that we use to make garlic sausage and breakfast sausage, ground meat,
which we're about to try on a Roberta's pizza.
That's right. And then the older male goats are the ones that go into our pepperoni, salami, and summer sausage. So we've really tried to find a way to use all kinds of different goats in our products to provide opportunities for the farms that support us.
Sure.
And another
to
one.
Use the, I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Go ahead. I was just going to say the other one, Appleton Creamery in Maine is a large scale goat cheese producer, and we've purchased a lot of goats from Caitlin Hunter. And when I talked to Caitlin about coming on the show, she'd love to do it another time, but she said she's up to her eyeballs in curd today. Today's processing
come on
day.
She should come on Cutting the Curd and Saxobee's Cheese Special on the radio.
I have to just mention that we also, on our farm, produce cashmere, so we're a fiber outfit. I know you don't eat it, but it's a very natural, soft, wonderful fabric to wear. So a lot of people don't even know cashmere comes from goats.
But you should check out Wendy's website at springtidefarm.com, because she has wonderful patterns and for sweaters and hats and all the instructions, and you can purchase the yarn from her and the fleeces and everything. It's just gorgeous stuff.
So basically what you guys are doing via the consortium is waiting until the moment in an animal's life where it's suitable for one type of product. So you use it for dairy when it's suitable for dairy, and then you age the animal. It lives, and then it goes into the processing for meat, or it gets sheared for cashmere. Is that basically how the system works?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, I mean, the neat part about the three of us being on together is that we represent three different aspects of the goat industry, And at the same time, it's all about meat goats, because every goat at some point in their life is a meat goat.
Sure.
And I know a lot of people who just really love goat cheese don't necessarily want to hear that. But in order to make goat cheese, that goat's got to be having babies every spring. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at some point, it just can't do that anymore. So
Marge, can you describe to me, because there might be a lot of listeners who have literally never even tasted goat, mm-hmm. since it's only now being sort of introduced into the American food system. Can you describe to me the taste profile of this animal and maybe compare it to other meats?
Well, I know when we go to the farmer's
what
market...
What does goat taste like?
Yeah, when we go to the farmer's market, we always have samples, and people, of course, we're in Maine, so they'd often say, well, it tastes like venison, so... Uh-huh. I don't know how many of your listeners have had venison, but actually, I toss it back to Kathy. Kathy, what do you think in terms of... What do you hear from people or from your family in terms of goat?
I think it's a very distinct taste of its own. Probably the texture is like venison, and that's why people, you know, have that opinion. It's really different than lamb or anything else, but it's quite mild and very flavorful. We've made everything too here on our farm, from sausage to curries. It's wonderful in curries and stews. We've, you know, just pan fried little chops. It's just a very nice taste. It's mild, it's not strong at all.
Is it gamey?
No,
not,
even not at
it's
all.
It's such a rough and rugged animal, it doesn't end up tasting gamey.
No, it doesn't.
I think some people that don't raise the animals with care and right, I think that's where that gamey comes from. It's kind of like mutton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to do a leg roast from a 10-year-old buck, it's going to have some of that flavor, but that's the animal, like the older dairy cows, that goes into the ground meat. And one thing you'll find, if you cook a stew and you use goat meat, it gets extremely tender, but it still holds its texture, which often other meats will turn kind of into a mush. The goat will still have that texture. And, I mean, it really is wonderful.
And it's interesting to talk to people, for example, around our sausage, because if you take our chorizo sausage and you're going to cook it in a pan, you've got to put some oil in there first, because there's no fat in it, and it doesn't shrink. And so, you know, people will try it and they'll come back and say, oh, you were right, you know, or they buy ground meat and they make a meatloaf and it's like, well, it didn't shrink, how come? Well, it's because there's no fat in it. And, you know, so it's not, you know, losing all that fat. So people are getting, you know, really 100% for their pound of ground meat or their sausage or whatever. And part of the reason we started doing sausage is it's a great introduction for people into something that they're not familiar with. Most people like Italian sausage, whether it's hot or sweet, uh-huh. and they're willing to try it made from goat because it's something that's already familiar to them.
Okay.
And I think on the flavor, the gamey piece, is that there certainly are cultures that prefer that very gamey flavor.
Uh-huh.
When I'm down here working in New York, I often will find various restaurants, ethnic restaurants, and try goat just because I want to see what the recipes are like. And I've had some very, very gamey goat that was quite intentional.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the way we would sell it. It's not the way we would harvest it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, in some cultures, that's really what they want, and that's perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this. Have you guys reaped any financial benefits from developing this, aside from the ethical advantages, have you reaped any financial benefits from developing this consortium? In other words, are you earning more money than you would have individually just doing your own things?
I guess I'll start with that just a little bit in terms of Time for Goat. We've been direct marketing. This is now our third year. And it is... we're sort of seeing the light at the end of the tunnel in terms of having to put the infrastructure in place, the walk-in freezers, the other kinds of things that we've needed to do. And certainly the goal is to provide an opportunity for us to continue to raise these wonderful animals and give people, you know, provide people with great food. That's, you know, that's where we're headed, and we're certainly, as Time for Goat, working to do that. Hopefully for the farmers that we're purchasing from, it has provided them with the benefit that we're able to purchase their animals. What we do is to set a price over the course of the entire year rather than have it fluctuate with the auctions and with holidays and whatever.
Okay.
And that provides
some
continuity.
Stability.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The other interesting thing is that there's no middle person here.
Uh-huh.
So,
true.
You know, we'll go to the farmer's market in the town of Damariscotta, which is near where we farm, and all these folks will come up and they'll try it, and then they'll say, well, let me order a couple of pounds and let me try this, and then they'll come back the next week and order more and keep expanding. And so your return to the farmer becomes so much more direct. It's that value-added part of it that really is helpful.
I also want to put in a pitch for Heritage Foods. I mean, because one of the things that has been very helpful for us is to be able to have our small consortium and our small farm, representing even other farms, be able to access a much wider market across the country. And the interesting piece is that there are so few farms or processors or whatever that are selling cuts of goat. You can go buy a whole goat if you've got a big freezer. You can put it in, that's
and
fine.
And if you have any idea how to process
what
it.
Or even how to cut it. Or even if you get it processed, if you've got a place to store it. But to be able to purchase just, you know, I like loin chops, that's what I want. Or I like ossobuco, or I like stew meat, and that's what I want. And to be able to do that. And I know for my husband, who does most of the shipping, nothing makes him happier than to send a box of goat meat to Texas, which has more goats than probably the entire Northeast put together. But you can't necessarily buy just a pound of stew meat there. So we're trying to fill in a gap.
Interesting. So tell me, how do you think? What kind of measures do you think we need to take to popularize goat meat more? I mean, what's the next step? How are we gonna get this animals coming out party?
Marge is the expert there.
Well, it's certainly this show is helpful. I mean, what we've been trying to do through Time for Goat is to really provide people with the opportunity to try something that's very exciting. We'd applied for a couple of grants when we started Time for Goat. We didn't get any of them. And one we actually turned down because they wanted to give us lots of money to do a study to see if people wanted to eat goat. And it seemed to me that of all the products that you might eat, meat is one of those things that you really have a determination. I like this, I don't like this. So if I were to walk up to someone on the street with my clipboard and say, hi, I'm doing a survey for Time for Goat, would you like goat meat? Would you purchase it? They go like,
totally no context.
Exactly. So our way of doing the study was to start at a very small farmer's market, give samples to people. Every farmer's market we have samples. Whenever we do, we have a commercial kitchen on our farm, and we do have gatherings there. We always serve goat. I do some catering. We always serve goat, whether it's chili or roast or whatever. And Wendy, they do a goat school on their farm twice a year and always have wonderful goat. We were there just last week. People were trying it that had never tried it before. So I think we're just out there really trying to give people the opportunity to try something new and different. And I know, you know, Kathy on their farm, I'm sure it's the same, isn't it?
It is. And when I was at a farmer's market a few years ago, I had a whole bulletin board of how I raise my goats and why, and the whole politics of our farm and feeding people good quality food. And I didn't have samples, but people just read the story of why I did what I did, and they were happy with it, and more people than not tried it.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're just out there in our own quiet little way, just doing our thing and trying to give people a chance. And what's fascinating is how many people, once they try it, determine that they really want, really want it more. Mm-hmm. And that's what is very good for us, because that helps the cheesemakers, it helps the dairy folks, it helps the fiber folks, it helps the meat goat folks. And it supports small family farms, and that's really important to us. And
that's what we're all about here at Heritage Radio Network, supporting small family farms.
Absolutely. And you do a great job.
I think that the more people realize they can raise goat and that they can do it, at least for profit, maybe not, they're not going to be millionaires off it, but they can be sustainable. It's such an exciting way to go. And we find people come on the farm here for our classes, and then they go home with a starter herd of some sort, and they just love it. They just go with it, and because of the fact that it's holistic in the sense, like you started off the whole session with, about the whole animal is used. I mean, we sell our pelts, we sell our meat, we sell our fiber, we sell our goats, and it becomes a circle of life. It becomes a whole system that is healthy from beginning to end and that is all-inclusive and completely sustainable. You know, so many people that are vegetarian wear leather belts and eat ice cream without realizing that the part of eating meat is a part of that circle. And you might drive a vegan car, but it's made with, you know, oil products, plastics and things like that. So, you know, we get pretty into this.
What's that?
We get pretty into this.
We do.
Yeah.
And even all the manure that gets generated ends up on a farm someplace, so it's feeding lots of good vegetables. So it really is just a complete circle. And I think once you add the milk and the cheese into it, it becomes even more complete.
Oh, yeah.
So let me ask you this, though. Do you think the goat is underconsumed because it's underraised? I mean, do you think some of the big farms in the United States, if they started to produce more goat for meat, more meat goats, that people would be eating more goat? Or is it an issue that the consumers, that there aren't as many consumers demanding it?
I would say that it's a combination of that. But I think that something like 70% of the goat meat eaten in the United States is imported. So there's lots and lots of room for the small farmer that's looking for a niche that they can actually develop something and have a sustainable product that they can use in so many different ways. It's just hanging out there to be taken advantage of.
Uh-huh. And in small scale or in large scale, I think that's the other piece. And it just depends on what people have for capacity on their farm.
Where are they imported from? From South America?
Australia, New Zealand.
Australia, New Zealand.
Same as the lamb.
Yeah.
Right, right.
The other thing, you know, again, just talking about the fact that we represent all different aspects of the goat industry, one of the things that I've been involved with, interestingly enough, through the American Sheep Industry Association, is a new group called the American Goat Federation. And what we're attempting to do is to bring together all of these different breed associations, all of the different product associations, whether it's the, you know, folks who make goat cheese or sell goat milk or do cashmere or any of the other...
Mohair,
thank you. Or any of the... I'm not a fiber person, what can I say? Or any of those other products, that to bring them together to really look at the marketing piece and to see what kinds of things we can do to do a better job on a larger scale of marketing goat meat and other products, because they really are so important and they're so positive, again, in terms of carbon footprint, in terms of the ground, and they're great for diverse
sustainability.
Farms. They're very sustainable. And so, and I think, Kathy, do you want to talk just a little bit more about your farm and the other things you do? Because you have a really more diverse farm than either Wendy or I have.
Well, our farm, we're into the fifth generation of people that are working on this farm. My two-year-old is the youngest one, and his job is picking up eggs and feeding the compost worms, which he's thrilled with. But we have beef animals, not very many, maybe 15 or so. We have firewood, we grow grain, we grow spelt, wheat, and oats. And last year we got a grant from Farms for the Future to finish setting up our mill, so we can process our own grain here, but we can also process grain for other farmers who have small, you know, lots that they, you know, don't want to travel for. We sell firewood, we grow vegetables, we have... My daughter and my husband are now trying to build a herd of Jersey cows when he retires.
Wow.
And she, you know, wants to start taking over milking. So from the dairy, from the Jerseys, we have milk that we sell on the farm and several cheeses, mozzarella and soft cheese, and then my goat cheeses. We sell beef either by the half, by the quarter, or by the piece now when people come here. So we do a lot of things. We can make pancake mixes, cornmeal, cornbread mixes, flour, rolled oats, rolled spelt.
Wow.
So it is pretty diverse.
This is a one-stop delicious food source.
We're trying to, you know, that's always been my goal, is to feed people really quality food. I've had health issues over the years, and I found that when I raised my own animals, I didn't have the same issues that I had when I would buy it at a supermarket or go to a restaurant. So my system is really sensitive, but I feel like the canary in the coal mine, you know, like if it's bothering me, it must be bothering people on some level.
So my commitment. So you're producing almost every kind of food type.
We are.
So you could, in theory, you could, if you could never leave your farm and you could be as healthy as, as healthy as anyone?
I don't know.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the things that's interesting in terms of growing our own food, like one of the things, we raise turkeys. And so last year, you know, Kathy purchased one of our turkeys, and one of the things we talked about was, well, let's trade. So we don't raise a lot of vegetables on our farm because I'm in New York working half the time. So mm-hmm. we talked about trading some vegetables for the turkey. And there's a lot of bartering that's going on. There are a lot
that's
of
cool.
shared things going on. And I think the thing that's exciting about the grain mill is that to some degree, what they're doing at Webb Family Farm is similar to what we're doing at Time for Goat, and that's providing the infrastructure, which is a very different infrastructure
sure.
in these two cases, but the infrastructure to support other farms as well.
Huh.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And her turkey was wonderful. It didn't bother me at all. It's the first turkey I've had in years that I didn't react to.
Well,
thank you.
The new turkeys are showing up this week, so we'll be in touch.
Okay.
Well, Kathy and Wendy, I want you guys each to give our listener more information about where they can find your products online, how they can learn more about your farm. So, Kathy, why don't you go ahead and give our listeners more info about it.
Okay, we're listed on the MOFCA website, the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners website. They just list all the farms that are, you know, certified by them and what products are available. And everything is on there, our phone number, our address. That's probably the best way to find us.
Yep.
What about you, Wendy?
We're Springtide. That's a one word, springtidefarm.com. And we focus on cashmere goats, so we do breeding stock and fiber and patterns and yarn, all those kinds of things, as well as our goat meat goes in through Marge and Time for Goat. So that's how to reach us.
And what about you, Marge?
We're dragonflycofarm.com, and we have a commercial kitchen. We also do pancake mix and baked goods. We also, it's a shared use kitchen. We have a wonderful woman, Maura Stevens, who's a chef, and she uses our kitchen to make great products. We raise garlic, goats, turkeys, chickens, eggs, pork, and dragonflycofarm.com. And it's great working with these other wonderful women. And I would just say to anybody, come to Maine, travel through Maine, eat your way across the entire state. You'll find great food.
Yeah, and they even have some lobster somewhere around here.
Yes, absolutely. That's right. We forgot about lobster.
Well, listen, ladies, Marge, Kathy, Wendy, I want to extend a sincere thank you from Heritage Radio Network and Heritage Foods USA for you guys joining this panel. And I know that Patrick over at Heritage Foods only approves of the highest quality producers, and I know that he's spoken nothing but kind words about you three.
Oh, thank you.
So,
thank
and
you.
We hope to have you many times again. And Kathy, you'll definitely have to be on Ann Saxelby's cheese show. 100%.
We love it.
Yeah,
all right, and the Heritage Radio Network wants to thank Hearst Ranch, our patron and sponsor. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.